Happy to be joined by David Roth of Vice Sports. David, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. How did I miss this before in your Twitter bio, or is this an addition? You're a turtle owner?
I have a turtle. Well, I own two, if you want to be technical about it. But yes, I got them on Canal Street in New York City's Chinatown, I think 12 or 15 years ago.
And whoa.
They haven't really changed. They've not gotten much smarter. They've gotten larger. But yeah.
Do they recognize you?
I don't think so. I have no idea. I would actually really love to know what they think I am, because it's this combination of they know that food comes from me, and yet they also treat me like a giant destroying deity, which is cool for my ego, but
oh, yes.
Also I feel kind of bad because, you know, the closest thing we have children in this apartment, and they're terrified of me.
Well, that's a good relationship, I think, to have. As long as you're on the on your side, not so much for them.
Yeah, I think a little bit of it's nice to feel respected. That's as far as I'll go. But yeah, it's functional. You know, we've been through a lot. One of them escaped briefly while I was cleaning the tank a few years ago. We still laugh about that.
Kind of a Steve McQueen thing?
Yeah, it actually was kind of a... I'm glad that we can dedicate this entire segment to my turtle stories. I feel like we both... It's what listeners crave.
And yes.
I'm happy to deliver it. Yeah, it escaped. At one point, it slid down it must have slid down a throw pillow and then went and sat under a radiator for a while.
Well, that's the way up, right?
It was covered in hair when I took it out, and I was like, I think he's learned his lesson.
Oh, yeah.
To the extent that they can learn anything, I think that it's gross, turned into a dust bunny. They haven't tried to escape since, as far as I know.
Bob Ryan did not share any turtle stories with us.
Yeah, I know, that's the thing, is he probably, because of all the actual knowledge that he has in his head, he might not have as much room for anecdotes about his pets.
We talked about Beatles albums with Bob.
I'm sure that he knows a great deal about that as well. There's a particular video of him. I remember when he left the Globe, or he never really fully left, but I mean, when he took a big step back, there was a video of a Globe staffer just reading names to him from like the NBA rosters of the year, like the 72-73 season. And he knew like a few things about everyone. And the guy was intentionally picking the most obscure guys possible. And I was in awe of it. And yet also, like, I think it would be a great burden to have that much wisdom in your head. Like, I'd much rather walk around, you know, lighter.
Well, yeah, that's certainly the way I roll. These NBA finals been, I don't know, a disappointment to you through the first couple of games?
Pretty lame. Yeah, pretty lame. I feel bad about it. I mean, like, it's been, I guess I sort of didn't really notice this until I tried to watch them. I don't think I've watched a full Warriors game this year. Like, I've watched bits and pieces enough to know how awesome they are. But they're exhausting to me. Like, I flip away in a way that, like, you wouldn't think that you would do, because they are historically great. I mean, I think at this point it's hard to say that they're not. It's just, yeah, it's not that fun. It reminds me more than anything of watching the Dream Team play in the Olympics, which is, you can be in awe of it, but all the tension and the usual fun that you get out of watching a competitive basketball game, just kind of, you get about half a game's worth of that.
We're talking
in the first half.
We're talking with David Roth here on Downtown. And Dave, let's cut to the chase and get to the really good stuff. We have a little something special for you right here this afternoon.
Is that there are many different ways to write a song. And the most unusual way came to me when I was in Europe about 4 or 5 years ago. I was trying to write a sports theme, and I did not have a piano in the hotel where I was staying. So I did probably what many of you have done, faced with a similar situation. I called my answering machine at home, and I left a message for myself.
All right, that is, of course... the great John Tesh, and I'm going to utter a phrase I never thought would move through these old man lips here. You wrote a fascinating piece about John Tesh.
Thank you, and thank you for the opportunity to talk about John Tesh, Rich. That particular, I'm glad to hear that bit. That's from a YouTube video that I highly recommend to everybody, of him performing his NBA on NBC theme, Round Ball Rock.
And here you go. This is just for you, too.
It is so inspiring to me. It sounds great. It is weird, though, because that song is so wired into my mind at this point. It was on TV for 12 years. I mean, if you watch basketball on NBC between like 1990 and 2002. You probably heard it a few hundred thousand times. I think it seriously was played 20,000 times during that period, which is astonishing. And apparently breaks down about 20 times per game. But it is still, like, it just resonates so much with me. And the fact that it was John Tesh, who I knew from my youth as, like, the sort of goofy, like, guy with a great head of hair that read Celebrity Birthdays on Entertainment Tonight, it still kind of blows me away. And I think I've known that for, you know, years. He was a very nice man. I had a really good time writing a piece about him. It was also really good to get to sit and, you know, just really consider my John Tesh related thoughts.
But and it was a wonderful piece with him, and he gets it. He understands his place in the universe and seems to be just fine with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny too. I think it'd be a lot harder if he hadn't been a success at literally everything that he set out to do. But he's still kind of like, you know, Triumph the insult comic dog constantly is going after him. And he can laugh at himself. And I think it's probably a lot easier to laugh at yourself when you've sold 10 million records and had a great journalism career and created in Round Ball Rock, I think, like an authentic contribution to the culture or like a super gnarly earworm for men of a certain age. It's one or the other, but it's certainly like he seems pretty chill with it. And I think there's something to aspire to there. For everybody, we may all try to be more Tesh-like.
Well, yeah, and I was shocked, as I'm sure everybody is, when they read your article that it hasn't been played in such a long time. Because it, to me, I hear it even when it's not on. It's so ingrained.
It's weird. I had the same experience in writing it that I realized that, you know, there's a new theme that ABC and ESPN use, and they use it often. And it's a totally fine theme. Like I think I could probably hum it for you if you gave me a minute. I would have to hum the entirety of Round Ball Rock first before I was able to recognize it. It still really does have this effect because it's so imprinted from when I was a kid watching these games, where it just, anything that I'm hearing, I'm sort of retroactively turning into Round Ball Rock in my head.
I think it's a good plan indeed. Since we talked last, a lot of things have happened. Mr. Met had an unfortunate incident. Should more mascots cross that line and do that sort of thing?
I feel like I want every mascot to be able to follow his or her or its heart. I respect Mr. Met for doing what he felt was right in that situation. I also feel like the image of Mr. Met flipping a fan the bird, I don't think I've ever saved anything to the desktop of my computer faster. Like, it was, I think I'm really impressed by this. One time you really see the processing power of a computer is when are demanding it to do that. It's just a beautiful image, especially for this entire Mets season. I mean, it really has that kind of, the combination of Mr. Mets' constant smile, the fact that he's doing the kind of the elbow brace gesture that you do sometimes when you're really firing a middle finger off at somebody. It's just, it's perfect. You could not, I mean, the thing with the Mets that's been tough is that there's like three things a week that are that weird now, and I just don't think that that's letting up at any time until maybe September. So, I mean, I'm not going to soon forget it, but there have already been a number of other incidents that are roughly as strange that have happened around it.
Well, and especially impressive when you only have four fingers.
Right. That's the other thing, too. I had this conversation last night with some Mets fan friends. Is it possible to have a middle finger when you only have four fingers?
Mm.
And I think arithmetically, the answer is no, clearly. We're all good counters here. But I think that with that, it's that brace, that gesture, that really lets you know what finger, because otherwise it could just be him pointing or him showing you his ring finger or something, but it's unmistakable. So I think that in many ways, that one of the many inspiring things about the Mr. Med gesture is that it shows you that a middle finger is what you make it.
Based on something you tweeted out the other night, David, would you be happier to have an asteroid hit the Earth than you would be to see a 2020 election campaign featuring Donald Trump versus Rahm Emanuel?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I feel like the asteroid would be fun, relative, just in comparison. I mean, obviously you never want to be obliterated by space junk. And yet at the same time, if the alternative is Rahm Emanuel and Donald Trump talking to each other on TV for hours, I feel like you have to consider it.
Yeah, I think...
I can't imagine a less appealing pair of people. I mean, can you, in the possible, like...
No, because they're both, in many ways, cut from the same cloth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, just disagreeable, hyper-aggressive guys. Which I guess is, you know, I suppose that's a type. I mean, I don't know that that's really that rare among politicians. I just think that with the two of them, it's a complete abject inability to appear like a nicer person than they actually are. It's just, it would be bracing and honest if it wasn't also so incredibly unpleasant to behold.
It was a particularly interesting weekend for the tweeter-in-chief. He just let fly a flurry in response to what happened in London, and I don't, you know, care what political side you come down on, but that just didn't make any of us look very good.
Oh, gosh, it's so terrible, man. I mean, this is the thing. It seems like such a priggish and unnecessary response. If, you know, if your first response to your president is being embarrassed or whatever, we obviously have bigger problems than him being a boor. But just the thought of him reading and retweeting the Drudge Report when he has a intelligence estimate available to him so many more times detailed that has actual facts in it. It's just, it's incredible that he has not availed himself of any of the many things that would make him better informed or better equipped to deal with this stuff. And I think also probably be less anxious. That if all you do is watch cable news and look at Drudge, you really will think the world is ending. And it's not to say that there's not plenty of bad things happening. It's just that if you're stuck at that level of constantly being afraid all the time, beyond everything else and beyond all the other troubling implications for everything, I just don't know how he gets through the day like that. I don't know how anybody gets through the day like that.
Well, he knows he's headed to the golf course in a couple of days, so he's got that going for him.
I guess that is really, that's the part of it that I find kind of amazing. Maybe you go on like a really dark 6-tweet storm, you know, ending with like, and it's coming here, like, be careful. And then instantly it's time to like play 18 holes and eat a hamburger. Like, how do you change gears like that? Either you don't mean it, or you're just exceedingly good at compartmentalizing things, or he turns his anger outwards onto golf ball transit.
I'm going to go with A out of those, but it may be some...
I think that's probably the
bizarre combination of all of them there. Hey, will you get to come up to Maine this summer at all, David?
That is the plan, yeah. We're looking to do it later in August. We're lucky that my Mainer in-laws are very good about traveling. So we see them fairly often and they come down here. But yeah, we are still finalizing plans and very excited to be able to do it. Just thinking about it honestly makes me feel a little bit better. My wife and I put together an email with a bunch of restaurant recommendations for one of her friends who's going up there. And getting in the headspace of thinking about like eating a sandwich outdoors in Maine in July and August was probably the most therapeutic thing that's happened to me in about 6 weeks.
And to bring it full circle, I assume the turtles don't travel.
They do not. We have some neighbor kids who feed the turtles. I think that I don't know actually the substance of their relationship. It's kind of hard to have a really deep relationship with the turtles, and I haven't asked the kids. I should. And for all I know, that they actually have a vacation of their own planned during that period. I can't believe they don't.
It's hard to find a good turtle sitter these days.
It is. Luckily, we have some right next door, which is really nice for us.
Well, it's not hard to find great music to send you on your way, and thank you for being with us, as always, David.
Thank you. Thanks very much. That's the round ball rock. I appreciate it.
David Roth of Vice Sports. Thanks, David. We'll do it again soon.
Right on. Have a good one.